D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Pleased to be joined, as we are every week, by Predators GM Barry Trotz. Hi, Barry. How are you?
I'm good.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was lonely in Detroit and Chicago.
That's true.
But it was good.
Glad to hear it. So you were quoted in ESPN in the story that published last Tuesday that the next 7 or 8 games would be a good indicator of how you proceed. And since you gave those comments, the team's played 4 games. You're 2-2. You lost a tough one at home last week to Florida, but you've been more competitive in the past 3 games. So how have the past 4 games influenced your decision-making process at all?
I think when you make that statement, I want to see how the team would respond. I think Ryan O'Reilly, I just saw one of his interviews, when you're not going good, bad things happen. And to me, that was great leadership by him. He's so correct and very accurate for, you know, where we are. Let's face it, we're not where we want to be. And when you're not where you want to be, then you start, you know, making the changes necessary to do that. So, you know, obviously we're meeting every day. We're planning. We're looking. I'm working the phones, getting a lot of phone calls, obviously, where teams are after the Thanksgiving break. That's sort of an area where teams start calling. Been a little bit more quiet the first 20. Teams, you're going to get teams that know where they are right now and say, hey, we're good. This is the direction we're going in. You're going to have a bunch of teams going, we don't know where we are because we're still in the mix and we don't know how good we're going to be. And, you know, so we're just going to, you're getting a call, but there's not a lot of substance to it. And then you get teams that know where they're going to be and they say, hey, we're looking to add this. And so it's my job is to feel those calls and see what teams are looking for. And if they have anything of substance come our way, then I've got to make some evaluations on you know what is offered and good deal, bad deal, something we want to do or something we don't want to do.
You're playing a team tonight that is in a similar position.
Yeah.
in Calgary, and I'm wondering if as you broach these phone calls, as you take stock of what you may or may not do, there are other teams like the Flames, for example. The Canucks have reportedly let people know that they are looking to sell. Do you look at their rosters and say, well, hey, they've got the same type of players available that we may have available? And does that enter into your calculus? Like, I need to act perhaps before another contending team calls one of those teams, gives them a deal that I could have, if that makes sense.
I would probably say unless there's a pinpointed player that a team calls about, they're going to call all the teams. Mm-hmm. They're going to call if there's a certain player that we have similar to Calgary, for instance, tonight. They may make a call and say, hey, what are you looking for? I'm looking for that player. What's your ask? And they're just evaluating the same way in reverse of what we're doing. So, you know, until there's some movement, I think you're going to get a lot of calls. You're going to feel them, and you're going to assess every potential transaction, if the best way to say.
You mentioned Ryan O'Reilly earlier. There was a report last week from TSN, I believe it came out right after we got off the phone with you, that the asking price for Ryan O'Reilly is a first-round pick plus an A-level prospect. Would you consider that an accurate description of what you're looking for Ryan O'Reilly?
I would love that if, you know, that wasn't my ask. Just let people know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that's out in the marketplace right now that is not accurate at all. But it's great reading and it's great social media and it gets everybody their hits and all that. And but I would say that, you know, Ryan O'Reilly is a very valuable player to the Nashville Predators, not only on the ice, but culturally and all that. That the ask is definitely in that ballpark for sure. And, you know, that to me, the difficult question I know that you're going to ask is how do you weigh that?
Right.
And it's very difficult. So if you set a certain price and you get it, then you have to live by it a lot of times. But you know that wasn't something that was put out by me. That was something from someone else. I have my price and on certain things, and the people I've talked to that are or called me and asked about him, I've given them a certain price tag, if you will.
So bear with me here for a moment. Barry Trotz is with us. So when the Titans were approaching the NFL trade deadline, a lot of us wanted the Titans to trade Jeffrey Simmons because the Titans are in a similar position as the Predators, and Jeffrey Simmons, as the best player on the team, probably represented the Titans' best chance to get a premium asset that could help kickstart their retool, their rebuild, etc. They said he's off limits, and after the trade deadline passed, the GM, Mike Borgonzi, said, "We never even considered trading Jeffrey Simmons because of how important we think he is to reestablishing the culture for the Tennessee Titans." So I'm curious, are O'Reilly's intangibles, because I view O'Reilly through the same prism with you as the Titans did with Jeffrey Simmons. So are O'Reilly's intangibles more valuable to you than the premium assets you could receive by trading him?
I think that's I can't really answer that right now. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you why is that, you know, Ryan's wherever he is, if he's with us or somewhere else, and I have no intentions right now, you know, to move him today or anything like that. We haven't even had that discussion. What I've said to him is, let's get winning hockey games. That's it, plain and simple. So a lot of the noise is out there, all that. We haven't had any discussions. And the best way to say this is, I said, everything's on the table. Mm-hmm. And I have to do that for our ownership. I have to do it for our room. I have to do it for the fans. I have to do it. I have to see what's out there. Everything's on the table. And when I say that, I sincerely mean that. It doesn't mean that I'm going to move Brian O'Reilly. It doesn't mean I'm going to move this guy, but I have to listen, because we're in no position not to listen.
And Barry, I think what I think of when Adam asked that question, I think of a guy like Luke Evangelista, who clearly is benefiting by playing with a great player like Ryan O'Reilly. Not only what's happening when they're out there on the ice, but the influence that Ryan O'Reilly has on a young player like Evangelista. So that's part of, I think, what you have to consider, right?
Absolutely. Well, here's the things that people don't know, and I'm going to take this room here. I said one of the media heads out there said that our room is toxic.
Yes.
And that is a bunch of bull. I'm just telling you, whoever I know who said it, it is bull. And our guys get along quite well with each other. It's not toxic. It's a good locker room. I can give you an example. And Willie, I think Willie goes to the gym once in a while.
I do.
He saw it in Thanksgiving. We had a day, you know, we were playing in between. We didn't have any ice. And we had Ryan O'Reilly and Stamkos and the young group in the gym. Unsolicited, on a day off, they were...
Nobody told them they had to be there.
No one told them they had to be there. They, the group, went together there. Willie was part of a dinner. How was the dinner? It was great.
Yeah, it was,
and we had laughs and we had fun, and the guys hung around. If it was toxic, they wouldn't hang around. They hung around. We had fun, and we won a hockey game the next night. And so the stuff that's out there, I hate when it's just out there and it's not truth. So I just want to clear that up, because it's not. We haven't been a good hockey team. Good enough hockey team to get enough wins. But we have some really good people in there.
I do want to ask you one other thing about that report that you're referencing from Frank Saravalli. You mentioned no toxicity in the dressing room. You're not getting any sense that there's any toxicity emanating from the dressing room up the ladder to management, ownership, anything like that?
No. I think I got a pretty good relationship. Guys can come up and talk to me and have their opinions and their thoughts. But I can tell you this, if we sat down with our leadership group, they'd say, hey, collectively, we gotta just be better. I mean, we lost some games. I look at the Winnipeg. You know, we win that game. We're 2 points behind Winnipeg. We'd have won that game the other night. Right? We're within a striking distance of Winnipeg, and we didn't win the hockey game. They just had a game, I think, the night before in Carolina, and they got handed a tough loss, and they got called out, and so they came. There was nothing in that game, and there wasn't a lot happening between either teams. We gave up two goals. One was a little bit of a dive in off a line change where our depth is you know, the younger player took a little bit of deeper dive, created a little bit of a 3-on-2. They scored on that. The other one was on a protocol and a controlled forecheck. Could have probably had the save there a little bit. Didn't get that, and we're down in the hole 2-0. We battled back, and I felt like we were coming on. When it was 3-2, I felt we were going to get that.
Then the penalty gets called.
And then that's
debatable cool. call.
Yeah, they're all debatable with you up there.
I said it. You didn't have to say it.
But at the same time, you see that we're right there, but we just can't get on the right side of enough wins. And that's part of the process. I mean, I get a glimpse into the future. I mean, you get the number of guys. We have 6 rookies, I think, playing this year. I can't remember the Preds having 6 rookies and go through the filter through the lineup, and I'm guaranteeing you before the end of the year you're going to have 10 or 11. And, you know, that's a great position to be in where you feel comfortable with calling up 10, 11 guys. You look into the future, you know, Matthew Wood started in Milwaukee. He's on our team. You know he's going to be – it's going to be, looks like he's going to be fine. He's going to find his way. He's going to be good this week and maybe not so good the next week. And hopefully he just keeps building. You're seeing in Luke Evangelista, you know, that sort of doggedness and that confidence, that swagger that Luke had. He sort of lost it a little bit last year. And I think he's getting it back.
I was going to ask you specifically about him because I am seeing that, and the numbers show it, right? His last dozen games or so, he's producing. So what is it besides the? I think when you play well, you get that swagger. But what are the things that he's worked on? Because obviously it was a long negotiation to work out what the next thing is. But now he's starting to show why.
Well, I think 2 things. He really worked hard on the skating. I mean, that's the one, you know, a little bit of the one hang up with Luke is that his skating. The separation in this league is really hard. It's getting faster and faster. It's getting younger and younger, and it's hard to get separation. And Luke was he would slow it down a little bit and you know, they lose some opportunities. I think now he's got that, you know, he's worked on it all summer, put in the time, it's starting to show. And he's got the doggedness that he had sort of lost a little bit, you know, and that's part of confidence too. And that's coming together. You know, you saw on the flip side, you saw, you know, Svetch, I thought, you know, he felt really good coming in the camp, didn't get off to get any production early. And then all of a sudden, he's starting to wonder and doubt himself. He got a big goal, you know, I think get the little bit of the, you know, confidence back. You look at Matthew, Schaefer, that's one of the, you know, when we started peeling off guys as part of the Ekholm trade. You look at the Ekholm trade, it's been a few years now, you're starting to see Reed Schaefer starting to play his first game.
It seems like it was a long time ago with that trade, man. You're just now seeing Reed Schaefer.
Yeah. You're seeing Reed Schaefer. You're going to see Tanner Molendijk. That's the other piece that was in that. So, you know, going forward here, that's why I'm trying to buy some time for our young guys to, do that little, we talked about that blend. Mm-hmm. Where they don't have to take the whole load on night in and night out. And hopefully they can get some better matchups. They can get their confidence. They can get a little bit of swagger. Because if you lose your swagger, it takes time. That's also probably happened with, you know, we can say Stammer and Marchie and some of the older guys. You know, when you're not, when you're scoring, you're feeling it. And Stammer's starting to score. So when he starts to score, he starts to get his swagger back. And then all of a sudden things go. You know, Marchie, he's been in and out of the lineup with some injuries. If he can get his swagger back, boy, I mean, he's been a guy that, you know, in his whole career, both of them, they have been streaky guys. When they get on a hot streak, they go. I mean, I look at Marchie last year. I don't think he had much for points in the last 20, sort of blending in with you guys, you know, the last couple of years. But the first 20 games, I don't think Marchie had much production.
Right, and last year, yeah.
Then all of a sudden, he went on a tear, and he ended up with I think, 56, 57 points. I mean, you really look in the league, there's not that many guys that were able to do that last year. You know, you always think, well, you had 56, 57 points. That doesn't seem like a lot, but you really look at it through the league, there's not as many guys as you think have 56, 57 points, whatever you had. So when these guys get into a little bit of a rhythm and a hot streak, I mean, they could put up multiple points and get
That was D-Mace's fault, by the way.
That was D-Mace.
Derek is okay.
We call that a fumble on D-Mace. He never fumbled with the football, but he just fumbled some equipment.
That usually is the sound when I was coaching, when I didn't really... when I wanted to move some furniture, I didn't like the way we played. There was some furniture moving around.
Well, let me ask you, Barry, about a guy that's sort of in a category of himself. We talk a lot about the veteran players that you need to sort of carry the load, and then these young guys who are just starting to get it. Nick Blankenberg is the unicorn, right? He's a guy that's never had anything given to him or everything guaranteed. He's a guy that you will have to make a decision on contractually at some point.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing? Everybody seems to be falling in love with this guy.
Well, it's pretty hard not to. You look at Nick, his whole career. If you really followed his career, he'll tell you, he was out of the Detroit area or the Michigan area. Wanted to go to the University of Michigan, wanted to play junior, wasn't good enough to play junior. He sort of got, you're too small, you can't do this. He went out to Alberta, I believe, and they put him on defense. He was a forward. They put him on defense. He had great success. Then the University of Michigan, I think, came back and said, hey, why don't you come on as a walk-on and partial scholarship, that type of thing. And he all of a sudden, a year or two later, he's the captain of the team and still undersized, undervalued. And everybody's doubted it, Nick all the way through. And he's just fought through it. I mean, even coming into this year, I said to Nick, I said, let's start out in a hotel. Don't get a place.
And that's got to be hard, right? Because he played pretty well last year.
And he played great for us last year. But you know that you were adding pieces on defense, and I said, let's just play this out. And he didn't play much at the start of the year, but every day he gives you everything he has. Every game when he steps on, he plays like it's going to be his last game, and that's culturally, that's a great fit. And I like the fact that Bruno and the coaching staff are rewarding him for producing. It's not where he was, it's where he is now, and are you getting the job done? And he has been. And there's some times when the size comes into the play, but I'll tell you what, there's so many good things on in his game. And for the fans who watch and you see Nick killing penalties, I mean, he's playing defense for us 5-on-5, and then all of a sudden we're killing a penalty, he's playing forward. And I don't know if people necessarily...
It takes me a second to notice it. So wait a minute. There's two other defensemen on the ice. Yeah. What are we doing? He's playing forward.
And like you say, he's a little bit of a unicorn, because it doesn't matter where you put him, he's going to give you a max effort. And I'll tell you what, if you come and watch the Preds every night, that's, you want us to win. I want to win. But if you're getting max effort, the efforts of Blankenberg and guys like that, I think you can... You can live with that. I can live with that as a GM, is that you're getting max effort from everybody. And, some nights you're not going to have it. This, Willie, the travel and the number of games, you see how many guys are getting hurt. You don't have it every night, so you got to find a way to manage it. And in the nights that you have it, you got to use it to your advantage and produce. And, Nick plays with his hair on fire every game, and that's what you love about him. Never complains about a thing. You never know if he's hurt or not, because he won't tell you, I don't think. Because that's just the way he is. He's a special, special young man.
Barry Trotz has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. Of course, he joins us every Tuesday during hockey season. Barry, as always, great to see you. It's been a few weeks since we've seen you. Enjoy the game tonight. Good luck.
All right, thank you.
615-737-1025. We will react to what Barry Trotz had to say. Hopefully Derek doesn't break anything between now and the next segment. But we will react to what Barry had to say, and we'll take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. We are presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at baxhomeworks.com. If the game, there we go. Oh. There we go. That sounds much better. I think. There we go.
Yeah.
Technical difficulties. We're good now. Max showed up, and now everything's just gone haywire.
It's your punishment.
Okay, well.
A 3-second muting.
All right. Well, you'll be here at 6, Max.
Max, so, you're not the producer.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. David says you're not the producer, so get out of here. An interesting conversation with Predators GM Barry Trotz. Mm-hmm. The one thing I took away from that, it sounds like he has set these are my words, not his.
Yes.
He has set what I would consider an astronomical price for Ryan O'Reilly in a trade.
That's there the way it sounded to me.
There was a report from TSN, Pierre LeBrun, on TSN Insider Trading. It came out, I want to say, like right after we talked to Trotz last week. Uh-huh. He reported that the asking price for O'Reilly is likely a first-round pick and an A-level prospect. And now, Trotz did not say that's what it's going to be, but it does sound like that is what it's going to take at bare minimum to pry Ryan O'Reilly out of Nashville. But here's the thing I like about Trotz's approach to this, Derek. I brought up the Jeffrey Simmons situation because I do see a lot of the Jeffrey Simmons situation
parallel
with Ryan O'Reilly and the Predators. Mm-hmm. We talked for weeks about the Titans should trade Jeffrey Simmons because he is their best chance to get premium assets to help kickstart this rebuild. And the reports were Jeffrey Simmons is off limits. And Mike Wargonzi said after the trade deadline, we never considered it. We want Jeffrey Simmons here to help us rebuild this culture. And Ryan O'Reilly fits a lot of the same criteria for the Predators. He's a winner, Stanley Cup winner, Conn Smythe Trophy winner, and there's a lot of interest in Ryan O'Reilly. GMs would be dumb with contending. GMs of contending teams would be dumb not to consider trading for Ryan O'Reilly. But what I do like about what Trotz said versus what the Titans did is that Trotz did not close the door on a Ryan O'Reilly trade. He did not say, I am not even considering it, which is what the Titans were reportedly doing, and then Borgonzi confirmed we never considered it. So I do appreciate the fact that Trotz, as much as he admires O'Reilly, is not shutting the door on trading him if push comes to shove.
Well, no, because he understands the position his team is in right now and him as the GM. It's not like they are a team that is in the mix or leading their division and they can make proclamations like the Titans did. We're not trading Jeffrey Simmons or we're not trading Ryan O'Reilly no matter what. He's not even on the table. If they were, you know, atop their division, then, yeah, they probably could say something like that. But they're not. They're in a phase that, and you said it, you explained it to them, you're sort of in this phase that the Tennessee Titans are in right now. And he understands that the quickest way to get to where he wants to go and where this team's going to ultimately want to be is to have an open discussion about, you know, players, not closing the door on any particular player, saying, hey, listen, we are not a good team right now. We're not where we want to be. We haven't been for the last 2 years. How can I sit here and say, I'm not talking to anybody about anyone on my team? I'm not in a place. As a GM, I have to do what's best for this organization. And Barry said this a long time ago. He said he's always going to do what's best for the organization. Now, it may be some hard choices to keep or trade away a guy, but he always is going to do what's best for the organization. And what's best for the organization is not closing the door on any potential trade out there because your team is not in a space where you can do that.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to go about it. I don't think anybody should be off limits. Now, there are players who are off limits because it's up to them.
Yep.
Roman Josi has a full no-movement clause. Philip Forsberg, UC Saros, Steven Stamkos. If they don't want to go anywhere, that's up to them. They can make themselves off limits. But for anybody who doesn't have that protection, nobody should be off limits. So that includes Ryan O'Reilly, who does not have trade protection in his contract. Mm-hmm. But as has been reported by Elliot Freeman and others, for the past year plus, the Predators are treating O'Reilly as if he does because of the respect that Trotz has for O'Reilly. So I like the fact that Trotz did not take the Borgonzi route and say, I value Ryan O'Reilly too much. I don't care if I could get a first-round pick for Ryan O'Reilly. I'm not doing it. I think the way he's going about it, based on how he explained it to us, is the way that he should go about it. He also staunchly defended the culture of the organization. There, just to catch you guys up, also, because a few people have pointed – this is unrelated. A few people have pointed this out on our text line. There's some sort of fan above us here at Barrel House
that's
rattling. I wish we could do something about it. I don't have an engineering degree. I don't know how to turn it off, so we apologize for that. But there was there have been a couple of reports from Frank Saravalli. Frank Saravalli is an NHL insider in the same vein as Elliot Freeman or Pierre LeBrun, Chris Johnston. He works for Victory Plus now, but he worked for TSN. He used to cover the Philadelphia Flyers a long time ago. A really plugged-in reporter. I have a lot of respect for Frank Saravalli. He's well-connected in the NHL. He's had a couple of reports over the past month where he has described the atmosphere in this organization as, quote-unquote, toxic. It's toxic from top to bottom, he has said. So that's what Trotz was responding to. We asked him about it last week. We asked for his response. Trotz said, you know, I've talked to my leadership group. I don't get that sense. But you heard Trotz. We didn't tell Trotz he could curse. But we'll allow it.
Just for this once.
Just for this one. Everybody gets one. Everybody gets one. But he was so adamant that things were okay that he cursed on the air. So look, I am not in the dressing room the same way I used to be. When you're in the dressing room every day, you can pick up on things, you know. But Trotz is claiming he has seen no signs of toxicity. He was focused specifically on the dressing room. That's why I asked him. You're not getting any vibes from the dressing room up the ladder that there's any sort of toxicity between management and the locker room, ownership in the locker room, and he denied that as well.
I think a lot of times, and I'm not saying whether, you know, the report is true or not. Obviously, Barry vehemently denied it. He gave it some examples about guys, you know, coming together and working out together and eating together and just breaking bread and all that other good stuff, just that camaraderie. It's hard because when you say a toxic environment, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean toxic? Is there arguing going on? Is it this coach don't believe in that coach? Is it the GM don't? So when you say a toxic culture, what are you talking about? You know, and I'm not, again, I'm not saying that his report is true or false. But when you throw something out there, it's almost like the minute you say toxic, you don't have to explain. It's just like it's a toxic environment and you don't explain. Well, what's toxic about it? I know they're losing.
Yeah.
And things get tough. And I've been on some losing teams, and a lot of it, you know, basically each time has been because of injury. But it gets tough in the locker room. It really does, because nobody wants to lose in the building. Nobody. So what may look toxic to you may not even be toxic. It just guys are upset we're losing. Are you not supposed to be upset and a little perturbed by losing?
Here's one theory I have. Here's one theory I have where that maybe, you know, where maybe it could be construed as toxic. I've said this before. I have a hard time imagining that Steven Stamkos would have signed here if he knew that this was what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Steven Stamkos had other offers, probably, you know, the same with Jonathan Marchessault and Brady Shea. They had lots of offers in free agency last summer. They chose the Predators. I know they got paid, right? But I can't imagine. Let's focus on Stamkos specifically.
Okay.
I can't imagine that Steven Stamkos, he's won multiple Stanley Cup championships. He's already going to the Hall of Fame. If he wanted to just ride out the sunset on some team somewhere, doesn't matter, he could do that. But I can't imagine that Steven Stamkos would have signed with the Predators if he did not think they had a legitimate chance to win. So is there part of Steven Stamkos? Again, this is complete conjecture. I'm not reporting anything. I'm trying to figure out what maybe the genesis of this toxicity is. Could Steven Stamkos be like, I signed up for this? This is not what I signed up for. I signed up to win. I did not sign up to be on the worst team in the league 2 years in a row. Like,
I'm
wondering if that could be part of it. That, again, a complete theory.
But that is, to me, that's not toxic unless it's being discussed every day. Every time you turn around, he's bringing this up.
Like, yeah.
Whoa, I didn't sign up for this. Now, if that is happening, okay, we need to taper that down. Come on, man. You're here now. Let's make the best of it. You know, maybe if you get a little bit more effort, and I'm not saying that he's not. I'm saying if things like that was happening, it's like if you take another step, you know, and you do a little bit more, maybe things will change. But when you're losing, it's tough all the way around, especially, you know, when you have guys that have come here that have been at other organizations and have had success, and they're in the latter part of their careers, and they come to a team that they believe is on the precipice of winning and winning big, and then all of a sudden the last two seasons are seasons you want to forget. So I understand that can be hard. Hell, it's hard for me in New York when I got there with the Jets. They had just come off an AFC championship game
appearance. Yeah.
Yeah, the year prior. And I come into a situation, and now we're losing.
Yeah.
So I can understand where the frustration, but is it frustration or is it toxic?
Yeah.
Toxicity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it frustration or toxicity?
Which I mean, you have been. I'm sure you have in your. I'm sure during your illustrious career, you had teammates who were oil and water, and
you can
sense toxicity when you see it. Two guys just can't get along. They can't even be in the same room as each other. Again, I'm not in the dressing room every day like I used to be. So, like, I can't tell you what it's like. That's a better question for Alex Doherty of the Tennessean, for example. But I understand that Barry Trotz is going to defend his team. Mm-hmm. And just because he says it's not happening doesn't mean it's not happening. I understand that. But he laid it out there. He claims it's not happening. The Predators are in a bad situation. The other thing, too, that I thought was interesting, and the point I was trying to make with him is, they're playing a team tonight in Calgary that's right above them in the standings, 31st in the standings. The conversations we're having here, they're having in Calgary. The Vancouver Canucks, same thing. So there are players in all of those teams that top teams are looking to poach. So my question was, if you're Trotz, do you have to act fast before a contending team takes another center from another team and leaves you hanging on to Ryan O'Reilly, for example, and you can't trade him?
That's sort of putting off desperate.
Yeah,
like
I hear
you. Desperate.
For sure.
And Barry doesn't want, and nor should he be desperate to move an individual just because, say, the Flames.
Yeah.
For instance, the Flames want to, you know, somebody come to them and they want a player.
Right.
And
they have a center named Nazem Kadri, mm-hmm. who fits the same mold as Ryan O'Reilly. He's been in the league a long time. He's won the Stanley Cup. He won with the Avalanche a few years ago. A lot of teams are going to want Kadri. So it's like, well, if I don't act fast with Ryan O'Reilly, that team is going to acquire Kadri, and then they're not going to need O'Reilly anymore.
But you're going to end up settling for less, I believe,
right.
if indeed you take that approach. It's like this.
Yeah.
He said, listen, I know where I want where that line is.
Yeah.
Okay? And just because you, Calgary, are about to get rid of your player doesn't mean that I'm going to try to swoop in and say, hey, listen, I take less.
Yeah.
No, you got to give me what I was asking for. If not, then okay. We just don't make the deal.
615-737-1025. We will take your reaction to our interview with Barry Trotz. We will also take your thoughts on Vanderbilt and the college football playoff. The new rankings will be out in just a matter of hours. I am prepared to be aggravated. And, of course, we will discuss all of that tomorrow. Clark Lee will join us tomorrow at 4. So we'll get Clark's reaction to the college football playoff rankings as well. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Derek and I are live at Bridgestone Arena. David James is back at the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace Vingen and Donick 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason and Adam Vingen here with you. Predators pregame with Max Herz coming up at the top of the hour. The Predators host the Calgary Flames tonight. It's a matchup between the teams ranked 31st and 32nd in the standings, so somebody has to win. But the Predators are coming up at 6 o'clock. Pregame coming up at 6 o'clock. Puck drop at 7 o'clock.
Grudge
right
match.
Here. Yes. Right here on 102.5 The Game. Tomorrow we will be joined by Clark Lee at 4. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Hutton will join us at 5. Silly
Clark.
Underdog. Yep, 4-0 Clark. Silly Underdog Picks.
Conference
Championship Edition.
Yeah. Who got the first pick?
I think I do.
Seriously?
Yes.
I had last pick last week.
Do you want... I think Hal had the first pick last week, so I'm up. So I think it's I think I have the first pick. So I have the pick of the conference championship championship letter.
Man. Will it's I only pick, what, five games, four games?
There aren't that many. Will I pick Duke to beat Virginia? I guess you'll have to find out tomorrow at 5:20.
Probably not.
Probably not. That would be rough. Jerry on our text line about a Ryan O'Reilly conversation. He says, again, I ask, why are we trying to get rid of Ryan O'Reilly if the young players come in next year or the year after that and are really good nucleus for our much better team? Wouldn't you want a really good veteran to help solidify that team? If you just keep getting rid of your decent players, you're not going to have anybody left. And it, look, it's the same thing we talked about with Jeffrey Simmons. That's why I made the parallel between O'Reilly and Simmons. O'Reilly is 34 years old. He's got this year and next on this contract, if I am not mistaken. And O'Reilly is not going to be here when the Predators, hopefully, are competitive again. Mm-hmm. I understand Jerry's point. Barry Trotz made the same point. O'Reilly's leadership is invaluable, but is it? But can you put a price on what he can bring you in a trade? So that's the thing you have to weigh. It's the same thing. It's the same conversation we had with the Titans and Simmons. Mm-hmm. Willie and I were on the team of, you've got to trade Simmons. He's not going to be in his prime when the team can be competitive again. You can actually get something that can help you turn around your team. Derek was clearly on the other side.
Yes.
I'm in the same place. I have a lot of admiration for Ryan O'Reilly. He is a fantastic hockey player. He will tell you he's the worst hockey player on planet Earth when he's not playing well, but that even then, he's still an incredibly good hockey player. Teams that are in contention will be banging on Barry Trotz's doors, begging to have Ryan O'Reilly. And I like at this point, we talked about it in the last segment. At this point, as valuable as Ryan O'Reilly could be to the next generation of Predators players, I think he is more valuable if you can get a first-round draft pick out of him.
It's different. I agree with Barry and with you. As far as O'Reilly and keeping those lines of communication, open, because you never know what someone's going to offer unless you keep it, at a point where they are able to offer and you're taking a phone call. The only reason I am pro this and was against the Titans moving away from Jeffrey Simmons because outside of Jeffrey Simmons, the Titans don't have many veteran leadership.
That is something I thought about myself.
And the Titans, and Predators, they have more veteran leadership.
Right, if you lose O'Reilly, I was thinking about that myself. If you lose O'Reilly, you still have Yossi, you still have Forsberg, you still have Stamkos. So I completely agree with you, Derek. I was thinking about that myself. But I saw this headline from Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, and I wanted to share it with all of you. Quote, Lane Kiffin claims Ole Miss fan tried to run him off the road. From Mike Florio. Quote, new LSU coach Lane Kiffin met reporters for the first time in Baton Rouge on Monday, and he made a pretty strong claim about fans of his former team at Ole Miss. Via ESPN.com, Kiffin contends that a Mississippi fan tried to run his car off the road on the way to the airport. Quote, I think that people get really upset when you leave somewhere because they feel hurt, because you're doing a really good job, Kiffin said. They ain't going to the airport and driving from all over to say those things and yell those things and try to run you off the road if you were doing bad, end quote.
He must didn't have a police escort. Ole Miss must have said, you know what? You drive to the airport yourself.
Oh, man.
Because I would think, like a head coach, wouldn't he get some type of escort there? Maybe not. Maybe Ole Miss and then,
Ole Miss probably
State
said,
Patrols was like, you know what? See ya.
You're on your own, Lane.
Exactly.
Kiffin. You're on your own. By the way, the best part about this is Eli Manning, famously, went to Ole Miss, quote tweeted that story from Florio and said, oops.
He was sorry it was Eli.
Yes, it was Eli. It was Eli Manning the whole time.
I mean, come on, Blaine. You don't have to. Just, Blaine, you at LSU, man. You don't have to, like you said, bring in a little tiny violin and, woe is Lane. And listen, if somebody tried to run Lane off the road, please. It ain't even that serious.
You could say that they went on the wrong lane.
Yeah, you're right about that. Stay in your lane. Driver. But again, listen, I understand that you love your sports and you love your team, hometown team, but it's not that serious. If indeed that happened, you should be ashamed of yourself, the person that did that. So, But it's Lane Kiffin.
Right. You've got to
you got to take it take it with a grain of salt when Lane says it, okay?
Now, here's something that happened today in the NFL, Derek, and I want your thoughts on it. The Pittsburgh Steelers picked up Adam Thielen off waivers from the Minnesota Vikings. But in addition to that, the Steelers waived veteran cornerback Darius Slay. If you're the Titans, considering the state of the cornerback room, would you consider picking up Darius Slay for the rest of the season?
Oh, man. I'm not sure. There's a reason why Pittsburgh cut him.
He was a healthy scratch for Sunday's game against the Bills. He's 34 years old.
Yeah, I wouldn't venture down that road, man.
He won the Super Bowl with the Eagles.
Yeah, and he hasn't been the same player since then. And that was obviously it was last year.
I assume there is some link between Slay and Denard Wilson. I have to imagine maybe there's some overlap at some point.
Denard wasn't in because Slay was in Detroit, Philadelphia.
He was in Philadelphia. So I don't know if there was any overlap.
It may have been. But, listen, I think the Titans are at a point, man, just let these young guys play.
Yeah.
There's no need to bring in a 34-year-old guy that ain't going to be on the team next year. He's just going to finish out the season. He may not even be active in, the remainder of the, four or five games they have left. So, I wouldn't. If I'm the Titans, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Young guys play.
He signed a one-year, $10 million contract with the Steelers in free agency and started 9 games. Missed the Week 11 game with a concussion. And he played just 20 snaps recently against the Chicago Bears, his fewest other of the season other than the injury-shortened game. So,
yeah, if I'm the Lions, if I'm Titans, I'm not touching that.
That makes sense. I was just curious because there are a lot of respectfully, because there are a lot of no names on the cornerback.
If they were in
contention
and say they needed, but it's like, man, let these young guys play.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to go about it. In a couple of hours, we will see the latest college football playoff rankings.
Oof.
We've made our case for Vanderbilt.
Yes, we did.
Trevor Maddich, earlier in the program, you asked him, what's it going to take? And you said an alien abduction. It's going to take an alien abduction, I assume, of Notre Dame and Miami and BYU. It's going to take an alien abduction of those three programs for Vanderbilt. Look, they've been stuck at 14 the past couple of weeks. I'm interested to see if they move up even at all. And look, I'm prepared to be aggravated. I'm prepared for Vanderbilt not to make it. There's too much working against them, and it's a shame because they had the best season in program history. We started off the show talking about how reportedly Jared Curtis, the top quarterback prospect from Nashville Christian, is flipping from Georgia to Vanderbilt. That announcement is expected to be made official tomorrow. But there's a lot to like about what's going on at Vanderbilt. It feels like I'm not saying there's a conspiracy. It does feel like the deck is stacked against them. There are just too many other things that have to happen for Vanderbilt to ultimately make.
Again, I go back to the first initial ranking.
Yes.
And I said if they are outside of this line, them getting in is going to be – it's going to take God to move heaven and earth for them to get in, basically. And that's what it's come to.
In the first ranking, they were 16th.
Exactly.
They were 16th in the first ranking. They were 14th in the second ranking, 14th and 14th.
They never got higher than 14th.
Yeah, they started at 16th, and they moved up to 14th, and they've been stuck at 14th.
The only way they were going to get higher than 14th if they would have beat Alabama or Texas, one of those games, and they didn't win either one of those games. Now, they were close. The Texas game was close. The Alabama game, if you watched it, the score wasn't indicative of how that game went. Once they made that first initial ranking, I said Vanderbilt's in trouble. They're in trouble. They're setting it up so they have no shot. Unless they just run the table, they have no shot at making it.
So we'll see how Vanderbilt fares. But again, there's a lot to like about what's going on for the Commodores. Diego Pavia doing a full-on media blitz, campaigning for himself as the Heisman Trophy winner and for Vanderbilt to make the college football playoff. I think Pavia has one hell of a case to be.
Pavia should come on with Clark Lee tomorrow.
Can you imagine that interview? The two
That'd
of them
great.
At the same time?
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Look, Diego.
I'm throwing that out there. I'm throwing it out there.
We'll see. Diego Pavia, he was back on with Bussin' with the Boys. That that interview was recorded yesterday. I believe it was published today. Pavia was also on with Wake Up Barstool making his case. So we'll hear from Clark Lee tomorrow. The CFP rankings, the latest CFP rankings will come out in a couple of hours. But we will talk to Clark Lee tomorrow. Hopefully he has the cigar smoke out of his clothes after the celebration at Tennessee. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us at 5 o'clock. Silly Underdog Picks, Conference Championship Edition, coming up at 5:20 tomorrow, and be listening for your chance to represent the people and to win a prize, which we will let you know about tomorrow. But if you, in case you missed it, a fun-filled show. Mm-hmm. Trevor Mathis joined us. Barry Trotz joined us. You can find those interviews wherever you find your podcast. But that'll do it for us today. Max Herz will have Predators pregame for you coming up in about 5 minutes. The Predators host the Flames, a puck drop of 7 o'clock before they head out on the road for a couple of games. But that'll do it for us. We'll be back at the studio tomorrow. We will talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Tuesday. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. See you tomorrow, 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace.